Hi, Debbie. How you doing?
I'm so happy to get to speak with you about Monster Summer.
Likewise. Thank you.
But before we talk Monster Summer, let me just applause for your wonderful turn as a teenage Ronald Reagan in Reagan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I'm glad you like that. Thank you.
Really nice turn. Sean and I talked about your performance, and he is equally impressed and wants to work with you again in the future.
Oh, that's great to hear. He was wonderful to work with as well, and I would love to work with him again. That's great to hear.
So, but now we move from actor to director, and boy, oh boy, you have delivered such a wonderful, fun, end of summer, start of fall, spooky season family film.
Thank you. That's really nice. Thank you.
I loved every minute of this, David.
Oh, thank you.
You fill it with adventure. You've got Little League. It's so Americana. It's on an island, on the water. You know, this is what summer should be for everyone. As you head into fall and the adventures as a kid that you get into. I love that you set this in a time period before cell phones and kids were glued to tablets and everything but being outside. This harkens to my youth in the 60s, where you'd go out in the morning, get on your bike, ride around the neighborhoods. Nobody was worried about anything. And you'd come back in after dark or whenever somebody started screaming for you to come and eat dinner. And that's exactly that's what you deliver here. And it fills a void, family films, and to provide alternative entertainment that's really entertaining. So good on you for doing this, David.
Well, thank you so much. You picked up on everything. Thank you.
And you've got casting in there with a cast that will appeal to adults for the nostalgia with Mel Gibson. And, of course, Lorraine Bracco and a couple others in there that I'm not going to mention their names because they might be spoilery. But then you've got all these great young teen actors that are everywhere right now. And the preteen and teen demographic will recognize them, and that will be an appeal. So you're appealing to multiple demographics here, David, and that's so important. So
that's the goal.
I'm really curious, once you got the script in your hand, how did you break this down and approach this production? Because it's not just the casting and the story. You have excellent production values here. Larry Blanford as your DP is brilliant.
Yes, he did it. He really did a great job. I don't know if I could have done it without him. I mean, when I get a script for me, it kind of starts with, do I care about it, right? Because directing is a really tough job, and you need to pour your full self into it. And in order to do that, you have to really, really believe in it. And to me, the themes that play in this film are really something I could get behind. There's a war of themes that I really loved and appreciated in this film, and that I could relate to in my own life. You know, one of the quotes I love in my own personal life is that evil wins when good men do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much at play in this film. This very much is a film about good versus evil, literally. And some of the other themes that play in the film in regard to redemption, in regards to belief versus non-belief embodied in a child and an older man, those themes really spoke to me, and I related to deeply, and I knew I could get behind that, and I would do everything I could to make this film as good as possible, to have fun with those themes. So it starts with the themes with me, and then from there it works into, am I seeing it? Do I see this film? And I very much, I'm a visual thinker, and I very much grew up with this kind of movie, and some of my best experiences as a kid were going to the movie theater with my father and watching, you know, Richard Donner films or Spielberg films or Ron Howard films, and all of those really gave me great memories of my dad. So it's always been on my heart to want to recreate a co-viewing experience for a modern generation where an adult could get something out of the film and so could a kid. And there were a lot of movies like that in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and I feel like they're not as present anymore. So I'm excited to recreate that experience in the movie theaters for everyone here on October 4th.
Well, I think you definitely have achieved that. And one of the things that also stands out here is this whole idea of the friendship of our core group of Noah, Eugene, Sammy, and Ben. And whatever traumatizes Ben is what really sets this off for Noah, Eugene, and Sammy. But you take us through, and you didn't shy away from this, you know, when friends get mad at each other, and they don't always agree, but they finally do find a resolution. And that's one of the great things, is you're finding resolutions in this film with the characters. They're problem solving. They're thinking it through. Of course, with Noah and Mel's character, Gene, leading the way. There's some intelligence here. These kids, they're not mindless glued to screens. And I can't emphasize right. that enough, that you that how much I love that you backed this up into a 1997 pre-cell phone, smartphone, tablet era. But I love the friendship and the problem solving. And you convey that not only through incredible performances, but in your visuals. So I'm curious about how you developed your visuals and working with Larry and also your production designer. I want to live in the clubhouse that Elliot created.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, with that clubhouse in particular was really a labor of love for Elliot and I, because we wanted to make it magical. And I, in the design of it, I had told Elliot, I want it to be the closet in E.T. for the boy in that film, played by Henry, what's his last name?
Henry Thomas.
I wanted his closet there had a magic to it, and the reason it had a magic to it was because there was this big stained glass window in the closet, and I had read an interview with Spielberg's DP, and he was talking about why he put a stained glass window in a closet. It makes no sense, and Spielberg said, "It's a movie. Let's do it, because it's a movie." And I love that answer. And so for me, with this treehouse, I put a massive stained glass window behind the kids, just because it was a movie, and it's going to add a wonderful red hue to the film. And red was very much a part of the visual language of the film that really embodied Noah's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were very intentional with the production design with Elliot, especially with the treehouse, that that could be a place where the kids could be themselves. They could think freely. They could work through problems. And all of the sets in the film were really designed in that way, where we used all the visual language possible to help underscore the narrative. And Norman Rockwell was a big inspiration on the film. You talked a little earlier about that. We very much wanted this to feel like it had a classic Americana style.
Yes.
That's why we wanted it to be before cell phones, because we wanted this to be a really a wholesome and very free experience for kids before technology, where they could think through things themselves and weren't being told how to think or influenced by technology. So yeah, there was a lot of deliberate choices along the way in all of the sets and all the visual language, very much from the jump. And with, you know, Larry and I, the DP, we were totally in sync with how we wanted to tell the film, that it was very much told from Noah's point of view. We extended his point of view into scenes where he wasn't even present, so it always felt like Noah was trying to figure things out all along the way, even in scenes where he wasn't in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all throughout the film, we were very aware of Noah's perspective and how the scene kind of revolves around him and his opinion on it from the jump. And we wanted it to feel nostalgic, so I definitely referenced a lot of older films, a lot of older Spielberg or Richard Donner films.
Mm-hmm.
Help communicate that kind of feeling.
Well, something else you also did with your visual grammar is you really take us from a wide mid. You've got a couple really nice vista shots of the coastline and the ocean, but you really take us from some mid-wides and slowly, as the story is intensifying and we're honing in on what's going on, the framing comes in incrementally tighter. And I love that, because we are really honing in on what exactly is going on and how that is impacting how Noah and Gina are searching and investigating, and how Eugene and Sammy are kind of, they get shuffled off a little bit when the friends have a fallout. But I really like the way you use the camera for that. But what you also do that is so metaphoric and I think so important is that something is happening on the island. We don't see it. You don't show us what it is. Until, so it could be anything. And I think this is so critical for a theme and a message to kids and even adults watching it about facing the unknown and overcoming it. I love that you waited until the bitter end to let us know what is this monster in summer. So that was a really smart, smart choice, David.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that we had really good writers. Cornelius Uliano and Brian Schultz, they wrote an awesome script, and I was privileged to get to direct it. And that, you know, saving things for the end and slowly unraveling them, that was a lot of their brilliance.
It has a Hitchcockian touch to it because, you know, Hitchcock's philosophy was always your imagination works better than shoving something in front of your eyes. And that's exactly what you implement here. And it works.
Oh, awesome.
It works so beautifully for you. How difficult was the casting for this? Because here you are, a director. You spent many, many, many years as a young actor. So I'm curious how that informed you or helped you in your casting process for the kids in the film. Because you know what it takes to be a kid actor. And I would think you can spot who might have that little sparkle or magic. So I'm curious about your casting.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was even tougher because it was in the pandemic, so everything had to be remote. You couldn't do things in person. I did grow up a kid actor, so I'd learned a lot over the years, and I can spot certain tendencies or trends in different actors that really helped me be able to whittle down who I wanted for this role. And it was a joy for me to get to be a part of the casting process on this film because I really seek to recreate my best experiences as an actor when I'm auditioning people. So I seek to give them a level of comfort and belief and security so that way they can really give me their best performance and feel good about themselves. I want them to feel good before they walk out of the room or hit leave on the Zoom button. But it was great. You know, when you have specifically designed characters in a script and they're written really well, in the audition process, it just works itself out organically. It just becomes really clear to me. I found in everything that I've done when I've been in the casting process, there really is just like one person for that role. And it's clear, like, this is the person. And it's about finding that person where the light bulb goes off and you go, ah, this is it. And then there'll be other people that will challenge that belief, and it'll strengthen it in the end because you go, oh, wait, am I sure? Am I not? How does this work? And then you come back around and find reasons to believe in that one person. But it's a faith-filled process because you really have to believe, okay, this is going to work itself out. And you got to surround yourself with really smart thinkers who also share your vision for the story because you're going to get a lot of opinions. So, you know, I tip my hat to our producing partners on this who really helped me help support my vision. And that was John Blanford and Dan McDonough at Pastime Pictures. And Mark Fasano at Nickel City, Lorenzo and Jim Henry on the Novo side. You know, they were really supportive and helped me find exactly who we needed.
You know, how difficult was it finding this location? Because this location is just perfect, David.
Yeah, it was a process. You know, we scouted multiple locations, and there's all sorts of factors that play into finding the location aside from just the visual element. You know, there's tax credits and incentives and crew bases and all sorts of stuff, so there's a lot to weigh out. But when we got to Southport, it was just a match made in heaven. It could be anywhere. It could be Martha's Vineyard. It could be Cape Cod. It could be It could kind of be anything. There was only a few giveaways with some of the, they'd have like palm trees or moss or some things like that that we'd have to be aware of. But we were able to shoot around that stuff, so it wasn't too distinctive in its location. And it was awesome. They were a really great town to work with. Southport was a really great town to work with, and they had all these cute little quaint shops that felt Rockwellian, that were exactly in line with what we were going for. It was all pretty close and compact, and we had a great time, and they had great food. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience in Southport.
You said the key thing for everybody who's on a production, food. That
food's important. You know, you got all these actors flying in, and they're flying in from big cities. They're used to eating a good meal, and it's really important to have a decent bite to eat.
Now, you know, a big element of this film, when we get to the third act in particular, for you, this is only your second film directorial, are the visual and special effects, especially in that third act. And I know you know where I'm talking about. How was that experience for you working with your visual effects and special effects artisans?
It was great. You know, John Blanford and Dan McDonough, their prior jobs were a lot of movies in Atlanta with Marvel, and they got to know some special effects artists from their experiences there, and so they brought that team on board, and they did a really great job for us. It was incredible to, you know, when you're editing, you're just looking at a basic image with no effects, either a green screen or just an empty room. And you know you're going to fill it with effects, so you have to really use your imagination when you're editing. But it's kind of boring, you know, when the effect isn't there, and suddenly the effect's there, and it just, you know, explodes your mind. It's a really cool thing to see, and then to get to craft that and tweak that, and the filmmaking continues every step of the process, because when the effects come into play, it's like, well, you can color the effects, and the colors can be in line with your color palette, and you can find ways to continue telling the story even though it's already shot, which was a really eye-opening experience for me.
How long was your post-production process? Once you went into editing and you're waiting for your special effects, your VFX, your SFX, your sound mix, how long was that post-production?
It was a solid 6-month experience to get it, to get the film pretty much done. And then you start testing, and you're still tweaking things in the edit, but it's all pretty much done. You're just going, do we need to shave some time, or do we need to expand this scene or contract this one? And a lot of that is with focus groups and whatnot, but the hardcore editing, yeah, maybe 5 or 6 months, something like that.
Wow. Well, I've got one last question for you, David. I gotta know, your second directorial, all these years as an actor, still acting, now directing, but what did you learn about yourself as a filmmaker and storyteller in making Monster Summer that you can now take forward into future projects?
Yeah. I walk away from this movie and I continue, you know, because it was only my second one, but I learned a lot about when I was right and when I was wrong. And I look at a lot of those experiences on this film, and I go, I thankfully, one of the things I did right was I picked a great team. And so I had really great people that I could lean on at different times. And I learned from them in the process as well. And so I paid close attention to when I was wrong, when I was right. And so I'm continuing to hone my instincts and go, okay, I can really trust myself in this, with this type of instinct, because I can see how it turned out in post, and I was nervous about that, but in the end, I go, okay, that was right. I need to trust that instinct. Or conversely, don't fall in love with your shots, you know, because a lot of those ones that you really love get cut. In fact, probably all of my favorite shots are not in the film. Because a lot of times those, which is totally fine. You got to do what you have to do to tell the story, and that's what's most important. So if you're in the edit, the shot takes too long, although it's really pretty, it's got to go because it's slowing down the film. So a lot of the shots that I really fell in love with are the ones that took too long. So those are, you know, those are sitting on a hard drive somewhere that can be in the special features of the DVD, although there are no DVDs these days. I really learned all along the way. But yeah, big lesson is don't fall in love. just make sure you're communicating the scene simply and clearly. The last kind of takeaway is that the quicker the better. If you have a way to emphasize a certain element in the scene and you have this shot planned out of how to do it, whatever the quicker, the quickest way to kind of communicate that and do that, probably the better in this day and age of short attention spans.
Monster Summer is going to hold everybody's attention span, David. You have turned out a wonderful film. It is perfect for the families. You've got just enough spookiness, but it's fun. There's adventure. The characters are engaging and interesting. And the parents are going to love Mel Gibson and Lorraine Bracco. You can't, a beautiful location. You can't go wrong. David, you have really done an impeccable job here. I can't wait to see what you direct next.
Thank you very much. It's very kind of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David. And here's to a great opening next week.
Let's go. October 4th, baby. Let's go.
That's it. Thanks so much, David. And I hope we get to chat again in the future.
Yes, ma'am.